Hi there, and welcome to Oz Hour, the only place where you can hear everything you never knew about the wonderful and strange land of Oz.
That's right. Today we are coming to you with another very special episode of Oz Hour, continuing our coverage of Wicked, the life and times of the Wicked Witch of the West.
This is the third in a multi-part series exploring the source material for the Wicked Broadway musical and the 2024 film adaptation. In this very special episode series, we will be covering the novel the same way we would cover any other Oz book, and we will be tying in references to the stage and cinematic musical throughout.
We're your hosts, Blake Stone
and Wyatt Swangham.
And as always, joining us is Hannah Aguirre.
Me and Bok.
Topical.
Yeah.
As you already know, if you listen to our previous two episodes, we do not have an Oz initiate this week. We are all here presenting on the book together. If you have not listened to the last two episodes, do not start here. Stop it right now. Go yeah. back.
Crazy. Don't do that. No. It says Wicked Part 3. So
We love you, but what the fuck are you doing?
What are you doing here?
Tonight, we are drinking Blood on Bronze, the recipe for which you can find on our Instagram at Oz Hour Podcast. Sorry about that. That's not my line.
No, you've never said it before, so I thought you were making
you
a choice. All right, and with that, let's take a slurp.
Ooh. Oh my god.
Wow.
Actually, I really
It's really
like
thick.
That.
For a second.
It is kind of thick.
For a second, I was like, I don't like that.
That's what I thought too, because it was like a punch to my head. But then as it went down, I was like, oh, actually, this is pretty good. Bok.
It just sounds so crazy.
There's just no other way to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Bok. Yeah, we're here. We're here with the boys. Bok is in the library studying, reading his books, doing all that. Apparently studying irrigation theory.
Yeah, which makes sense because he's from Munchkin Land, so he's studying to be a farmer.
Yeah,
and he's
in the agricultural school.
Agricultural. A quick question, because I actually don't remember, where did we leave off last episode? What was happening?
Oh yeah,
Galinda and Madame Morrible are talking about the roommate situation.
That's right.
And we learned that Elphaba's sister Nessa Rose is on her way to school.
That's right. Okay, thank you. It's just hard because all of these open with like a cold open, but then it's like, wait a minute, weren't we like a while ago last time we met? So okay, that makes sense.
Does a lot of like
it is
point of view and perspective shifts.
Yeah,
that's true. I should definitely say we are almost to summertime.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Almost to summertime. The exams are like halfway through. That's a big reason why our boy Bok is at the library studying.
Mm-hmm.
But he is at the library studying all the time. That's kind of his thing. He's like, I might know the irrigation theory, but I want to understand it.
Yeah.
And while he's doing that, one of the boys that are with him is Averick.
Averick.
And Averick, I will say, he is our Fiero.
Exactly. He's the hot one here.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally. Like, he's so cool and so hot. He's also just he's a fucking dick.
Yeah.
Like, honestly,
I hate Averick, but it would work on me. Like, I would literally have the biggest crush on him.
Oh my god. Well, yeah, if I was in high school, I'd be like, yeah.
He also kind of is the, like, Fiero from the movie and musical, because, like, he's meaner, I think, which we'll kind of get to.
He's
cool. Actually like an actual dick, but like he gives that same energy that Fiero starts the movie and musical with.
Very, very cocky.
No, there's literally a moment when he eventually like leaves Bok or whatever, he kisses him on the head and then winks at him. Mm-hmm. So
it's like,
yeah.
Honestly though, I will say like Averick in the book, like you will come to learn, listener, like he's a pretty big character who we will follow his story through life.
Yeah.
But the musical, the stage musical, just made him like that little fat man who escorts Fiero to school.
Yeah.
And then the movie made him a horse. And
oh my god,
I'm
the
like,
horse Averick? Is Averick?
He's like, whoa.
Oh my
Averick.
God.
Oh my
You're
god.
You're so right.
And I'm like, Averick has got demoted.
Wow. Justice for Averick. Justice for Averick.
I don't know. I think he deserves to be sat on by Fiero.
Okay, actually, and sorry, but do you guys mind if we go down a little bit of a tangent here?
Let's go.
Let's go.
So I just read this on fucking, I don't know, we're probably Wikipedia because that's where I go for my reading. But I read that the horse that the guy in the movie, name him, what's his name?
Oh, Jonathan Bailey.
Yeah.
I think I know this fact.
The horse that he's like rides is the horse that he rode in another
Bridgerton.
Movie.
Bridgerton.
In Bridgerton. And he was like, I want that horse. That's my horse. We're fucking friends. And so it's just crazy. And it makes me think that maybe that horse is an animal.
That's sweet.
Capital A.
Oh, well, the horse, he speaks to him. He speaks in the movie.
I'm in real life.
Oh, in the real life.
Yeah.
They seem to have a connection.
Also, speaking of Jonathan Bailey's sincere relationship with this horse, everybody knows about that little moment right at the top of the film where some hooded figure is pounding away on a horse. Averick. That's Averick.
Oh, literally, you're right. Yeah.
Averick the horse, not Averick the man.
Yeah, yeah, I was
like, at first I was like, because now you're pulling in other references.
I'm just glad that Jonathan Bailey was like, oh, you're going to make a big deal about a horse in this movie? I know just the horse. Okay, sorry, Hannah. As
no,
you were
that
now.
Is
sorry.
So fun because I did not know the horse was named Averick. He deserves to be a horse.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't like him.
Well, now you're implying that being a horse is a bad thing, and there are horses who are people.
Ooh. No, you're right. I do love Spirit.
There you go.
Oh my God! Don't get her
another
started.
Horse that
Let's
can't
go.
Talk. But okay.
Okay. Yeah. Continue. So yeah. So the boys are trying to convince Bach. They're like, "Quit fucking studying. Let's go to the pub. Like, school's about to be over. Like, you're fucking good." Let's go to the pub. There's like this new witch or whatever that's there, and she's hot and sexy, and we're gonna go fucking
like
watch her.
Basically, a strip club or like a burlesque joint.
Yeah,
something like
they
that.
Call it a gentleman's club.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think they're actually like the witch though. Actually, is like someone who can do magic though, like a little bit.
Probably.
Yeah.
I would think. Yeah, sexy magic. But yeah, so Averick does kind of stay behind though, and he even shoots to Bach. He's like, yeah, and we're probably gonna ditch those fucking losers and go to the philosophy club, so you better come with that, because you told me once that you were curious about the philosophy club, so we're gonna go.
And Averick wants to get Bach in the philosophy club.
Yeah, and let me tell you, the philosophy club, to kind of give you an idea, it's almost, I feel like compared to the movie, it's almost like the Ozdust ball, but rated R.
Yeah, rated super R.
I was like,
but
that's,
I feel like that was
probably
there.
The connection it, that they're making.
Yeah.
But nothing that happens at the Ozdust Ballroom
actually
ever
rated
XX.
Yeah, I might actually.
The Philosophy
say
Club
that.
Changes Tibbetts life forever.
Oh my God.
We'll get there.
We're gonna get there. Yeah. We don't but even know Tibbetts yet.
We don't even know Tibbetts.
Right now, all we know though is the word philosophy club as a possible location they could get to by the end of the night.
Yes. It is a
but Bach is saying no.
Yeah. After being at a pub, strip club, all that type of
stuff.
Yeah,
that's where we're gonna end.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you close it out.
But yeah, Bach was like, I'm not interested in that at all. And so he's like, yeah, I might have said I was curious, but I've also said I'm curious about death. Doesn't mean I want to experience it.
Yeah, right.
No, and so then, yeah, Averick goes, and now after the exams, and once we start getting closer to exams, like ending and all that type of stuff, the whole school starts to be a lot quieter. People are leaving. Some people stay, but the people that are leaving are more of the well-to-do people, because they go back to their summer house and you know, are able to have the means to do that. Most of the people that stay back like work jobs and stuff like that, you will come to see. But yeah, so it's starting to get quieter and emptier, and Bach's like, okay, well, now all the boys are at the pub and not that many people are here, and I have like, right now, I have a pretty good view of Craig Hall dorms.
Yeah. So he climbs up to his little, I mean, I imagine him climbing up into a special spot.
Oh, he has done this before.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah. He's like on the roof outside a window.
And the
or
fact
something.
That he even thought, he was like, he's been thinking about this, because he was like, oh, everyone's kind of gone. The boys are at the pub. Like, it seemed like he was waiting for this moment to happen.
He didn't go out so that he would have the
exactly.
Alert.
Not to study irrigation theory, to fucking be a peeping Tom.
Or
so,
maybe
yeah.
he's trying to
because
irrigate something else.
Right. Because before Averick left, he was also kind of like, well, how late do you think you guys are going to be out? Like, maybe I'll find you later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, he's like, once I finish up with my little evening plans. Okay. So like, tell us about his evening plans.
Yeah, let's, okay, yeah.
But so he climbs this fucking, there's like some stable that has perfect view of the dorms. Yeah. And he is going there kind of on a mission because he wants to creep on a certain individual, specifically. So he's a little closer. He's up on the roof. He's looking fucking through. He's seeing girls undressing. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, but I really am looking for a certain someone.
Wait. I'm sorry, but I do just want to say, and even though this is not me being an apologist for this insane behavior, but it's not like they're completely naked. He's watching them take, like, their outer clothes off, and then, like, he...
That's true.
Still
he's
fucked
in his,
up.
They're in their, like... Well, he calls it lingerie.
Yeah. Like, they get down to their underwear. Yeah. And he doesn't know if one of them's going to get naked.
Exactly. Yeah.
The thing is, he gets interrupted when he thinks he's all in the clear. All of a sudden, he hears a screeching noise and he starts to fall and assumes that he's going to fall to his death because of what he has done.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he's like, oh, karma is here. As he falls to the ground, he hopes that maybe it is the certain someone, but no, it's not. It's the other one. Yeah, it's Miss Elfie.
Someone else watching him.
Yeah. Which is weird. In the book, they did say the other, or he did say, oh, it's the other one.
Yeah. Which it's interesting because he's already objectifying them in his mind because Glinda is one of them and then Elphaba is the other one.
Yes.
They're just an item.
Basically.
Sorry. Yeah. I guess we hate Bach. Since we hate Bach, I'll just go in harder.
No, I mean, we'll he's, just like, he's, a he's just like a weird young boy who like, living in a medieval world.
Yeah, it's giving adolescence.
It also says he's so curious about it because he didn't grow up with sisters, so he never got to see that. I'm like, what is this, the witch? Like, mm-hmm. Watching her sister change? Like, yeah. Like, it's different times,
different
but Bach.
Different times.
Bach.
Yeah, we have modern sensibilities, so.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, so he obviously, when he comes to, he's a little embarrassed, and but him and Elfie, honestly, they have a cute little banter.
Yeah.
Like they are hilarious.
Yeah, they are just going back and forth with each other. She asked him, so were you just examining the tops of these trees? Did you find the tree of your dreams?
Yeah, because Elphaba
exactly
knows.
Exactly what he's trying to do. And he's trying to find, maybe not the tree of his dreams, but the girl of his dreams. So he's just like... He's like, you're mocking me. Like, I'm already embarrassed enough. And then Elphaba, it gets brought up basically that Glinda is Elfie's roomie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, okay, interesting.
Because they've only met like that one time, right?
Yeah.
At the poetry reading. So like,
but she still see, like, if she's ever near Glinda, she sees Bach like in the background, like.
Oh my god. Okay.
Like, because like that conversation is a little bit like, oh, I think I know which one you're looking for, and perhaps she's my roommate.
Yeah, there has to be a reason that she knows. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Elphaba offers to set up a meetup date like 3 days later. As the day comes, Bach, he's like, okay, today's the day. I'm going to see my girl. So I'm going to do my hair. I'm going to wear my best little clothes. I'm going to find my fanciest boots.
Do we think he looks cute or do we think he looks stupid?
Well, the thing is, he doesn't have evening shoes, so he has to wear just normal boots, which I'm already like, oh, what kind of boots are those? Like,
he's
farming boots?
Oh,
and then I'm like, he puts like a little white ribbon around his head and pulls his hair up into a curl. Is what it says. I'm just saying.
I know. And I don't know. And they also said he looks pretty amphibian.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what does that mean?
Stop comparing people to water creatures.
Yeah, they really do.
I mean,
honestly, they compared people to animals all the time.
Oh, which is fine because animals.
Lowercase.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I don't know.
Just to be compared to an uppercase goat, I mean. So.
Yeah, it could mean anything.
It
that
could mean
goat
anything,
could be a murderer,
true.
Or it could be a teacher.
That's true. But yeah, so he after he does his little fucking OOTD, he does his what's the other fucking get ready with me?
GRWM.
He goes to the rendezvous spot. It's basically the same spot that he was being a peepee
same
tom.
Little courtyard. Yeah.
Which is interesting to pick that spot to meet.
The boys and girls can't interact without chaperones, so like he has to sneak in. Like
that's true,
and so, and that's the best place apparently.
This is right outside of Elphaba and Glinda's house. So yeah, it's just like or their dorm. So it's like
Well, it's like in the back. It's the kitchens. It's like where the garden is.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but their building.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, their building. But yeah, Elphaba and Glinda are sitting on a bench near the area. Immediately, Elphaba begins roasting him for his hair, attire, everything. And then he starts talking about, like, because I think she calls him, like, a hedgehog. And then he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, hedgehog is runs in my family.
So
my grandpa,
charming, honestly.
No, yeah, he's like, my grandpa was a hedgehog, and he actually was hunted down and fed to Ozma, and now we use the recipe in our family.
Yes.
And Elphaba's like, wait, really? He's like, no, I'm joking. And I was like, okay, Bok.
No, honestly, like, it's weird because, like, I don't ship Bok and Elphaba at all, but the fact that they just, like...
You don't?
I don't see it, but the way that they just, like, roll with each other on, like we're both smart people kind of level.
That's what I was
going to
say.
They're so funny and charming with each other.
It
doesn't make me ship them, but it makes me, like... Bok and Glinda, there's nothing there.
There's nothing there.
He can have a woman at his level.
Yeah. Bok and Elphaba would make sense to me, but like it's not like I think there's something there. I think it is just because like they're both smart people, like they're both like normal people pretty much.
I
like,
happen to know that
there's moments where there's definitely moments where I ship it, and then there's moments where I'm like, yeah, stay as friends.
Yeah.
No, they're great friends. Like they're perfect as friends.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that yet.
But definitely this type of part or this part or whatever, I was definitely like, oh, you guys are kind of cute. I love this. But Bok immediately moves his attention to Glinda and starts to profess his love to her. He says some like little poem thing and everyone's like, you rehearsed that? That's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's cringe.
Glinda says she is flattered, but she's honestly humiliated that he would even think about doing something like that to her because she is a proper Gilliconese woman that needs to be marrying a banker.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, someone that doesn't work with his hands.
She's like, you're in farm school.
She says, you're Bok, you're small.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oof. Like, oh.
That was, yeah.
Like, okay, race and class is bad enough, but like, you're just going to like put it all in one word.
Honestly, he gets fucking, he should not have come. He should not have come on this day to this because he just gets abused by everyone.
He's so delusional.
He really is delusional.
With getting rejected so hard, he's still just like, well, let's be friends and then we'll see where that goes.
Exactly. He's like, I'm not taking no for an answer because I'm just going to have to be around you then.
She's like, why would a guy and a girl of our age just be friends? Like, that's not... Come on.
And while all this is happening too, Elphaba is just like fucking cracking up. God. She loves it. She's like, oh my gosh. She was like, I fucking like she like knew like this was probably how it was gonna go.
Yeah.
And there was even a moment where Bok was like, Elphaba, like, can you just like let us be alone so we can talk? And she's like, no, you don't understand because I'm a woman, so I talk Glinda, and then you're not going to be able to like, you know, she's like, I need to be the mediator here. And
you
then
you won't understand. I'm from Munchkin Land, so I understand you, and I'm a girl, so I understand her.
Exactly. And then like the next thing that Glinda says, like she was like, oh yeah, but I can't be alone with a boy without a chaperone. And then she's like, you see?
And she's like, also, I set up this date for you, so watching you fucking fumble this is my payment.
Yeah, that's the payment. That's the pleasure.
That's kind of why she did it, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure. They don't have TV back then. All she does is read all day, and that's fun, but not that fun.
But then Alma Clutch shows up, and she's like, excuse me, Like, what the fuck is going on here? Boys and girls?
Yeah.
No, we don't do that. So she immediately is like shooing him away from the girls. And then like Elphaba continues to be roasting and she's just like, no, you don't need to be worried because he's not even like fully grown or like developed or anything. He doesn't even have a beard. And then Alma Clutch is like, yeah, he doesn't. He isn't fully developed. You're right. And then Bok's just like, I gotta go. This is too much. I'm literally being emotionally abused by every single person here. So I have to go. Like, this is not it. So
I will say, importantly though, Galinda in this moment, she says like, hey, I appreciate what you're doing though. Like, you seem really nice. I won't ignore you in public. That's my gift to you. Is like, I will acknowledge you if I meet you in public.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, great. And then, yeah, he's just so embarrassed about everything in general and he gets the fuck out.
But yeah, he does. He gets his little, at least I'll be acknowledged by the one that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, fast forward just a little bit, because now summer has officially began.
Mm-hmm.
No more
classes
exams.
Are done.
Yeah, classes are done, and Bok is basically in the library daily. He's in the Three Queens library because that's where he's working during the summertime. Mm-hmm. And his company are classic queen boys, Crope and Tibbet. Tibbet and Crope.
Yeah,
that's how they said it in the book, and I just kind of liked how they said it twice like that. So
I
like,
are a unit.
I yeah. do. I love them.
They never go anywhere without each other. And also, I am realizing there probably is something to it being Three Queens College, and then like
they're the Three Queens.
They're the Three Queens, yeah. basically.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Crope and Tibbet had thought they had Bok all figured out, and then he started talking about Galinda, and then they're like.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I thought we was just three girls.
Honestly, when I was looking up Three Queens, because I was like curious what all the schools like thing are, one of the descriptions of it is like mostly filled with gay people.
Oh my god,
that's like specifically like, oh. about Crope and Tibbet.
You don't know anyone else, but that's fine. Oh, there were those boys that were dancing though in the field, like almost naked.
It makes you wonder about True. Them.
Oh, that was.
Oh, but they were
Queens.
From.
It's like the game. Arts and literature.
It is.
Shit.
Yeah, it is.
So speaking of literature, because Bok, Crope, and Tibbet, they all become friends because they're working in the library together.
Yeah. Yeah, and their job is to like restore old books.
I think Crope and Tibbet said something like. They're the housekeepers of the library
okay.
or something. So they're keeping everything clean and organized. Yeah,
I think they're cleaning the books and stuff too because the books are all made of like leather. So they're like
okay.
cleaning them.
Yeah.
Because I know they just talked about vellum. And that's a type of book covering.
Yeah. I remember them saying that they're like the housekeepers. And they're very proud of that, which we love because, yeah. But as they're about 3 weeks after the meeting that happened, the humiliating one, there was an earthquake that caused some minor damage to the Three Queens Library, and the building had to be closed for construction.
Mm-hmm.
Just another interesting little weird
Weather
natural
phenomenon.
Disaster. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and just, that is interesting.
Yeah, I just want to throw that out. But because of that trip, Tibbet, Crope, and Bok took their lunch outside by their favorite canal, the Suicide Canal.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's an interesting name, but that's what it's called. And a few moments go by and Alma Clutch, Galinda, Fene, and Shen Shen show up. And Bok was just overjoyed to see his...
She said she'd talk to me if she saw me.
Exactly. Yeah. He is very much
this
like...
This is his chance. Well, you know what, though, too? It's like, he doesn't... I mean, it is still kind of weird, but like, he doesn't have a lot of... like opportunities to see them in person. Like he has to just end up seeing them somewhere in public with Alma Clutch. And it's like, you just have to be lucky. So
yeah.
He jumps at it.
And it's during the summertime, which he says he's very happy to see that she's here for the summer.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, as we said earlier, people that stay for summer are not the people that Galinda wants to be around.
Yeah.
She's and she's like, I don't like that you said that because I actually am gonna be leaving for the summer. I'm gonna be going to Miss Fene and or is it Shen Shen's?
It's Fene's
summer lake house. And she makes that very clear That's what she's doing.
I'm traveling with my rich friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, she's like, we're taking a holiday during high summer.
Do not try to contact me.
Yeah.
And so eventually they continue talking and doing their little thing. And Bok asks how her roomie's doing. And Glinda is thankful because Elphaba is working, so she can have a break from her. She's like, I don't see her as much because she's not there. And Glinda shares that Miss Elfie is working under Dr. Dilliman doing research.
Which is crazy.
It's like, where did that relationship come from? Because in the musical and in the movie, we see that relationship develop.
Mm-hmm. There
in a
was
way that we haven't here.
One moment where she... I mean, it's only like one quick thing, so it doesn't seem like it's like super developed, but where she stayed after class when he had some sort of thing. So I feel like maybe something happened there.
We didn't hear the conversation.
We didn't see anything, but there was a moment where she did stay behind, and who knows, they probably got talking, and then this idea, because she's staying behind, he's like, do you want to help me?
You're right.
And like, more like, will anyone help me?
Yeah.
Will anyone out there help me, please?
More like, yeah.
Another just like interesting comparison moment like here is, I think something that we've all talked about a lot is like Glinda and Elphaba, like in the musical and in the movie, it's like they're just like gay for each other. They're the best friends in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
But their relationship is so complicated in the book.
Yeah.
They've been roommates for a year.
Yeah.
And they still like don't want to be around each other.
Yeah.
They're friends at this point. They still don't want to be around.
It's like, it's exactly. Like, Glinda and Elphaba can, like, have a conversation in their room. Glinda will listen to Elphaba and go meet Bok in the garden. But, like, if she's in front of Shenshin and Finet, she's not doing it.
It's like different Glinda
we're
getting.
They're two friends. They're not two best friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's, we get a little bit more of a build in the book, which honestly I'm thankful for.
It's complex.
It makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
But as Glinda's telling Bok about Dr. Dilliman, Bok is like, Dr. Dilliman?
Excuse me?
He's the fucking best professor at Chiz. Like, he's amazing. Like, I'm so jealous that Craig Hall gets him and not us, because he only teaches at fucking Craig Hall, because women are lower and animals are lower.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well,
that's kind of like Elphaba's hope too. It's like, she's passionate about the animal rights, but then she's also like, well, I'm a chick, like she's got skin in the game too.
Exactly. She's like, I'm next. Once you get rid of the animals, what's gonna happen to me? We're the new enemy. Yeah.
You're telling me the goat can work here, but a woman can't?
Literally. But yeah. So and Glinda's like, oh, I don't understand how you're so impressed by goat. Like, interesting. So she kind of has that, I don't know, sort of mentality.
Yeah, she's still just closed-minded.
Yeah,
like,
still,
which is no excuse, but like, it's just how she is.
Yeah, and it's funny because obviously Bok is with Crope and Tibbet, and then Galinda's with her friends Finet and Shenshen, and they start interacting a little bit, and it gets kind of weird. And Bok makes a joke about like how different their social settings are, and it's like, yeah, we just wouldn't really get along super well. I think we should just duel to the death. Mm-hmm. And Glinda's like, excuse me?
For some reason, like, I don't know why she's like
a little
that.
Yeah,
like,
but she just doesn't get Bok. That's the thing. I'm like,
yeah,
I wrote in my note, I was like, if he told Elphaba that, she would have laughed.
Yeah, she would have done it. She would have played like, into the joke.
Yeah, she'd been like, yeah, been what like, day?
She smiled and addressed him without his honorific. Oh, Bok, she said.
Without his honorific. And then a week or two later, Bok took himself to the railway square. Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know why I felt like I was
saying
that.
You can do
that
it as many times as you need to.
Yeah, we will edit this out.
Like, I was saying that so wrong. But Bok took himself to the railway square, where he found a cafe to read a newspaper. And let me also real quick just describe the railway square. It's basically like the city hub of Shiz? Yeah.
It's like Shiz,
but it's like off the campus.
Is the town. It's not even necessarily the school. And that keeps fucking
Up. It's like Shiz University is in Shiz. It's like Portland State University is in Portland. So if they go off campus to Pioneer Courthouse Square, then like
they're still in Portland.
In Portland. That makes sense. In Portland State University.
Okay, so Railway Square is Pioneer Square.
Exactly. And also this would be where Galinda, when she arrived and saw all those zebras talking and got really freaked out and Dr. Dillman got her a cab. That's where that would have been. It would have been Railway Square. So we're kind of just back in the heart of the city.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yes, it is. Yeah, heart of the city. And he finds this cafe to read this little newspaper he bought a couple weeks back. The paper talks about animal protesters in like Emerald City, a near drought that is happening in Munchkin Land.
Which, can I just say also, everyone keeps saying weather phenomena, and I'm like, oh my God, is the drought in Munchkin Land, which is happening for a long time and has a lot of consequences.
The drought has been happening since Elphaba was a child, and some very important, it brings some very important things to happen.
Yeah.
And like just with the whole like yackel fate system of this whole story.
Oh my gosh.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, there's a drought still in Munchkin Land. I'll let you continue there.
It is still in Munchkin Land. There's like certain moments where it's gone a little better, but then it's nothing changes. And there's like even thunderstorms where water is running off and turning to clay. Like it's just insane things that are happening. And there's even talking of, you know, getting water from the Vincus region to help all of Oz. But the idea of making that canal system is like, seems very laughable to people. Like,
Well, because the Yellow Brick Road already failed.
Exactly.
You can't trust these people to do anything.
And
very empty. Seems to be a lot of empty promises.
Yes.
True. But something I was thinking when I was earlier today reading through this part or listening to this part, like when I'm thinking about Turtle Heart saying, oh, yeah, in the Quadlin country, we have like these rubies underwater. We have like all these resources, but like, they'll destroy us, kill us, and ruin us, and then take it away. And then that's what they did. And now it's like, oh, well, there's a bunch of water in the Winky country. Like, it makes me wonder how long it's going to take before the wizard sends people there and kills all those people and takes their water.
Takes
so
their water.
It just makes you wonder how that's going to happen.
Well, you know what? I didn't make the connection about all the water in the Vincus, but let's see where the story takes us, shall we?
Yeah. Yeah. So just some thoughts.
Damn it.
Everyone needs to
cut the mic. Cut the mic.
Everyone needs to be thinking, remembering. Okay. And as Bach is reading, he looks up and he finds Elphaba with no chaperone at the Railway Square Cafe. I actually don't know if that's the cafe. I can't remember the name of it.
They are in a cafe. They share a lunch.
Yeah. So, yeah, he invites her to have some tea with him. Elphaba explains that she was shopping, getting some little trinkets for her sister, and she's going to send also some knitted striped stockings made by Alma Clutch.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of gives into the Nessa Rose attire.
Yeah, the striped stockings are crazy.
Thanks, Alma.
Yeah.
They're iconic. I hope you know what you mean. Like, was iconic.
Either it's a style that her sister will really come to love, or she's wearing these very socks 20 years
when
down
she dies.
Yeah. But yeah, we learn a little bit too about Elphaba's sister. She's 3 years younger, and she will eventually be coming to Krage Hall too. Not only is she younger, but she's also crippled. She has no arms, and her name is Nessa Rose. And we come to learn that Elphaba is very protective of Nessa Rose. And she's just like, everything she's saying, she's like, I have to be prepared. 3 years, I'll have a better relationship or a stronger relationship between Madame Morrible, because she's not going to fucking shit on my sister. Like, she's already thinking about ways that she's going to make sure that Nessa will be comfortable when she gets to Shiz and stays there.
She's very protective.
Very protective. We also learned that Melina, Elphaba's mother, is dead. So the conversation continues and we kind of move past Elphaba's history and her trauma. And Elphaba begins teasing Bach about Galinda and just being like, oh my God, you know, obsessed with her, blah, blah, blah. And Elphaba then kind of starts talking about Galinda and is like, she is, you know, when she's not around her rich hoity-toity friends, she can be an actual cool person.
Yeah, she actually has things to say when she's not like being a society
But when she curls her hair for 3 hours, I fucking hate her.
That's the thing. Like, I honestly, I feel like Elphaba is being totally fair about the way she talks about Galinda in this moment.
Yeah, she's being very forward.
And how she's just like, I feel like I understand Galinda better than most people do. And when I see her behaving like something that she isn't, I find it very frustrating because it's like you're being a fake version of yourself. The real you is great. And then Bach is like, well, I'd hate to hear the way you talk about me. And it's like, dude, shut the fuck up.
It's like Elphaba literally just trusts you enough to say like what she actually thinks and give you a straight take on Galinda.
And she's literally like, no, dude, like I love Galinda.
Yeah.
I love
Galinda. She literally
said
that. Galinda.
I don't love that person she is when everyone else is looking at her. Mm-hmm. That person sucks.
And that's the thing. Elphaba is probably the only person that gets the real version of Galinda, like out of herself.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, Alma Clutch saw the real Galinda for the first time this year.
She's like, no, this is good for you. We like this. But after all that talk, they start going into the research with Dr. Dillamond because Bach is curious. He's
science.
Like, what is all this that you guys are doing? And so she kind of starts to go in and saying that, yeah, we're trying to figure out the difference between an animal in an animal tissue. So the animal's different tissue.
Hear it how you will.
And then between animal and human tissue. And they're having to search everything extra hard because a lot of the literature that they find has a very like unionist bias to it. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of like science. It's mainly seems to be faith-based, I guess.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Dillamond's like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, I want to find the difference and have it be this actual thing that's based off like what we can actually fucking see.
Yeah.
Remind me here, is the point to see if lowercase animal can become uppercase animal, or is it to see how uppercase animal becomes lowercase animal?
Well,
I know they're talking about the transition to like...
It's they're trying to just show that, like, if they can show that an animal with an uppercase and a human,
that there's no difference.
Yeah, if their tissues are the same, if their brain cells are the same, then how can you say they're different? And then to compare that to a lowercase animal, and is that different?
It's the exact same
like,
thing as an uppercase.
Because if it's the exact same thing, then, like, what is the difference?
Yeah.
And it is weird because they say, like, you know, Craig Hall used to be a unionist monastery, and so like that's how it was started, and that's why a lot of their literature has like the backing of like this kind of weird narrative where the unionists like are coming from more of like a classically conservative narrative, but also pushing that idea of like animals
very,
are different.
Like creation.
And we're gonna like, get to some weird stuff too, which it's not even unionist, all of it, but
Box even just like doesn't really understand because he's like, well, what's wrong with like unionist literature? Like, I don't think it would be biased because the unnamed God is accommodating to many ranges of being.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Dillamond, who is apparently claims to also be a unionist, is like, well, there could be a difference. And I want to, you know, I want to find that out. And that's kind of what Elphaba is saying. And she's feeling very optimistic that the wizard, once he gets this information, maybe
he would be
very open-minded.
Yeah. Let's bring science to the totalitarian leadership. Let's take our science facts up to the fascist, and then they'll make the changes.
They just needed some random people to do this study. That's all they need. Now they're like, oh,
yeah.
Sorry for the oppression.
God.
Yeah.
Being a girl only has like limited access at her
Exactly.
Well, she can't go to the Three Queens Library, for instance, where there's actual text. And Dr. Dillamond, because now the wizard has restricted animal rights even more, or rather his government has, so Dr. Dillamond can't even go access those texts either at Craig Hall.
So they,
or, excuse me, at Three Queens.
Three Queens or...
Ozma Towers.
Ozma Towers or Brisk. Or
Briscoe.
Oh, Briscoe Hall, that's right.
Briscoe Hall. So... Bach basically offers his help, and he's like, well, if you guys just are able to give me exactly what you need, like, I can go get those books and, you know, give you all the information that you guys would need. And so Elphaba's like, yeah, I'll accept that for me and Dr. Dillamond. Thank you very much.
Honestly, she gets like kind of emotional in a way that I'm like,
she
does. Best friends now.
Yeah. Cause she even has this moment of like, like after this, like women's rights is next. And she gets, she gets pretty passionate. You see a little bit of her passion coming through, which love.
Yeah.
And so now Bach Summer has sort of been taken over with doing this research for Dr. Dillamond and Elphaba, and he even kind of gets a little crew, Crope and Tibbet.
Yeah. We have an espionage crew now.
We do. And Crope and Tibbet, let me tell you, they are cosplayers because they are like, okay, we're researchers now. We're going to dress the part. And they really start dressing up in disguises and stuff. And Bach was like, no, you're not doing that.
Don't
like,
fucking do that.
We're going to fucking chill. But yeah, they do their research and then they would meet at Railway. I don't know why that word is so hard for me to say. Railway Square, to exchange information very secretly. I mean, Elphaba, it's funny because he fucking gave Crope and Tibbet a hard time, but then Elphaba comes to their meeting literally dressed in like a total, literally covered, like only her eyes you can see. She's like completely covered head to toe. No one would be able to tell who she is, but at the same time she is a girl that isn't allowed to be out without a chaperone.
And it's also raining for some reason.
It is raining. Thank you for saying
and
that.
And so she is like protected from
and even when someone shakes their umbrella near her, she
like,
shudders.
She shudders.
I don't think that these students have, I think they understand that what they're doing is risky and needs to be done in secret.
Yeah.
I think that is known to them. I don't think that, like, it could be very dangerous is really, like, it has that gravity with
them.
I think they know that it's something that, like, they could get in a lot of trouble for.
Yeah, and like, they Elphaba, maybe shouldn't be giving the information.
Elphaba's the most recognizable person
in the world.
So... if she's meeting with Bach and Crope and Tibbet every Sunday at the cafe, that's going to turn some heads.
Yeah, it's memorable. And it, well, we'll get there in a moment, but it is memorable.
Yeah. When they're meeting at the Railway Square to exchange all the information, Elphaba explains that Dr. Dillamond is out here making scientific breakthroughs. Dr. Dillamond, he's trying to authenticate the way our ancestors thought about animals.
And he's doing it with a microscope.
Yeah. He basically invented.
He invented a microscope. Right? That's how I read it.
That's how I
remember
read it.
The one that he like kicked on in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if that is not fucking ADA technology, I don't know what to tell you.
I love that scene in the movie. Yeah. Because it was just like such... also just like showing such a good example of this like weird world that we're in, that it's like, we have animals. So like we or people who don't have thumbs and things like that. So there's like things that they have to make to be able to do certain things.
Yeah.
And, like, we have the technology for him to be able to teach a class. So why are you trying to take that away from him?
Exactly.
He probably paid to have that fucking thing installed. So
exactly. Mm-hmm. And this world is not so accommodating as the one we see in the movie. Dr. Dillamond is trying to, you know, see the ancient stories and see where everyone's ideas of how animals basically became like sentient beings. And so Tibbet, they're all talking about like what they know and stuff. And Tibbet kind of starts going into explaining about the coming of animals and animals in Lorleen's story. of this big flood that happened. Which, and
this is all just so crazy.
Like, this is very strange. And also love that there's like a big flood that happened in this universe too.
Yeah.
interesting. But it was basically, we kind of learned that it was basically Lurleen just peeing, like releasing herself.
Yeah.
And the animals that survived her pee, they are the ones that are like, have, you know, have souls and all that type of stuff. And the ones that didn't, you know, they didn't survive. And I feel like that's a little.
It's like, but well, then we do have animals that don't talk. So then what did she poop next?
Well,
and then
well, I think the ones that like didn't make it or didn't try to swim. I mean, I think maybe they did live, but it was like those are just animals.
Yeah. Or the ones who were touched in the purified in the water.
Yeah, but didn't it make was, it.
Yeah. Or
didn't swim.
I don't know. Think it was the ones I'm getting confused because there's okay. So
there's other ones too, which I think this will go into. Let me just say the unionist take.
Yeah.
Bok starts to explain this one and he's saying, well, instead of it being piss, it's actually a sea of tears from the unnamed god because of the sorrow that's filled the world. And the ones that became sentient, they built rafts and they survived the flood. And they're the ones who became animals. And the ones that didn't are the ones...
So it's like Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
I like the Lurlinest one more.
Actually, and
you like
okay.
the pee?
And now...
Zebras did not make rafts. Before
well,
they had souls.
That's true. But, I mean, they... Okay. That's fair. But I do... Now I remember because the ones in the Lurline myth or whatever, the animals had to cross the river and the ones that did were bathing Lurline's urine and that's what made them holy. But then the ones that didn't cross the river were the ones that stayed animals.
That's what it
was. That makes sense because it's like they didn't die. They were just swept away.
Yeah, exactly. And then the ones that built the rafts in the Unionist myth, those are the ones that became capital A animals and the ones that didn't build rafts.
Okay, okay.
It's so interesting. There's so much like lore surrounding it because it's a very like real thing that
there's
exists
so
around
many,
them.
Yeah.
Because you know, like ancient civilizations like would map out the stars and stuff, but that's something that's so unfathomable to them that they're actually like doing something with that. But the way that it's like you have capital A animals, just ask one of them what their ancestors said. Like they must have logged.
There's
got to
be stories or something.
It's just like
unless
written language. The like written language doesn't exist, and the verbal storytelling tells us this myth. Like the people who have said this myth for thousands of years
are
saying that.
Do you think that like where Munchkins come from and how they got to be is all lore and speculation rooted in religion, or do you think they know exactly where Munchkins come from?
Probably rooted in religion. I mean, like, to the extent that, like, all these people are religious. And if you ask a religious person in the United States, for instance, who was, well, I guess who was, like, Christian or, like, Muslim or Jewish, they would say that, yeah, my religious tradition says that, like, God created to, like, a man and then took his rib out or whatever and made a woman. So, like, people still would say that today if they're earnest in their belief. So that's probably how it is for Unionists and, like, Lurlinists and stuff. They would say that. Elphaba, who knows what she would say because she's an atheist.
Yeah, two,
so
2,025 years ago, I came from a rib.
Exactly.
Can you believe
well,
that?
That's when Jesus. But 6,000 years ago, I think, is what you'd believe if you thought it was from a rib.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, the world is only that old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And then to kind of continue with the religions, we now are like, well, what about pleasure faith? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a religion, too. And they kind of talk about creating an animal through sorcery.
Yeah.
But right in this moment, Elphaba's like, everyone, get the fuck down and stop fucking talking about this.
Yeah.
And she gets real secretive and stuff. And Bok's like, okay, what the heck? And he kind of looks around and he's like, okay, well, I only see like this person, like a TikTok man and this person. Weird that she's acting like that. I wonder who we're concerned about. But yeah. It's the TikTok man we're concerned about. And yeah he's called Grammatic.
Yeah.
And Elphaba kind of describes him as the shadow of Madame Morrible. And he's like a lovesick puppy. So
ugh.
Seems like he's kind of like her little person, her set of eyes.
Yeah,
it's
at
so
the school.
Interesting because, like, you know, like TikTok and the regular Oz books, like we've heard him speak a million times. We've never heard Grammatic speak. I don't know if he even does.
Well, if, like, she doesn't wind up his speaking.
True.
But
just one thing in particular, though, is just that, like, they're still that afraid of him. And they don't even know if he can tell her anything.
Yeah.
It's like he is possessed.
But yeah, but he's always around.
He's always around. He does not mean well.
Just feels like that, you know?
He's creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say something, the next, literally the thing we're about to get into, makes me think that Grammatic would be able to report anything that happened back to Madame Morrible because of some of the responsibility she gives him coming here soon. So I think that the danger is present and real and not just like, oh, what if? It's like, no, he will tell her because he knows how to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which is scary.
Yeah.
That's another thing. It's like, we're so afraid of Madame Morrible. We don't know why, but we are afraid of her.
I mean, animals should be seen and not heard.
Yeah, like shit is just instinct sometimes.
Yeah. Things, we feel it in our bones.
What's Galinda up to?
Well, Galinda is gone. Averick's back, though. So summer is going. It's still happening. But some people have come back. And Elphaba, who's still at Chiz, gets a invitation from Galinda to meet with her and her friends at the lake house.
Yeah. Very kind.
Very kind.
The letter is pretty vague, too. Like, Glinda's being like, I don't know. It's just like, hey, like, we'd love to have you out here. Like, come on out.
If you want
to
come and stay for a couple days, like, please come through. Alma Clutch is here.
I won't take no.
Yeah.
We're having a great time and waiting for you.
Yeah. Elphaba is not down, but of course, little Bach is there in her ear. And is
you
like,
have to go.
You said Galinda?
Galinda needs you.
Oh, okay. So you have to go.
I'll be your chaperone.
Yeah. Which is so weird. It's like, oh, I'm a boy that's about your age. I'll watch over you, and that's okay.
Fuck?
It's like, what? Yeah. Send an actual adult.
Like, there can't be another Alma?
Yeah, what about an Alma? Well, I guess the Almas are on vacation.
They might all
right
be,
now.
Yeah, busy or
good
whatever.
For them.
But, yeah, so basically, Bach is like, no, you should go. And Alpha's like, well, I don't have a chaperone. And it's like, well, I'll be your chaperone. And if I'm not enough, even Averick could be your chaperone.
Because Averick's family is rich, too. So he's like, if you say Averick's name, they're going to trust that.
And like, they're both like 3.5 years older than Elphaba. So they actually kind of are like,
it does kind of
the muscle.
Makes sense, I guess. Mm. If like Elphaba's really wanting to go someplace, it's like, okay, well, here's someone who's a little older than you.
Yeah.
But Elphaba goes to Madame Morrible to see if she can even go with these chaperones. And
and she says, 2 20-year-old boys taking a 17-year-old girl to the country? I don't fucking think so. Maybe that's actually crazy.
Yeah, she's not down with that, but she is a little down because she's like, I feel like she's trying to be on Elphaba's sweet side a little bit too, of just like, well, I'm not as bad as you think. I'll let you go.
I'm not the horrible Morrible that you call me.
Yeah, she's like, I know you call me horrible Morrible, but I'm not so horrible because I will let you go, but you'll just need to take Grammatic with you.
The ultimate chaperone.
Literally, Grammatic has to ride on top. He is not.
Yeah, they so have to just carry him.
They pack their little carriage and stuff, and they all get inside it. And then Grammatic, I just imagine him laying on his back with his legs and hands up, and he's just like on top of the carriage, like a suitcase.
Yeah, he's strapped down,
strapped
also like,
down.
Pick me up.
Because that's his default setting from his back.
Yeah.
And not only is that ride probably rough for Grammatic, it's also rough for Averick and Elphaba because they are not fans of each other. They do not like each other. And like Averick is like asking Elphaba, is like, oh, are you related to Elf? Because your name's Elphaba.
And
then
green.
She's like, well, maybe you should try breaking my arm and seeing, because elves have little thimble arms. So break my arm and then maybe see if I'm an elf. And I was like, okay, Elphaba, calm down. I get
two
it.
Two people could not be any different from each other.
Yeah, no, he's just like, what the fuck, you're weird. And,
like,
and she's like, yeah, I am weird.
Neither of, like, both of them already don't want to be doing this trip anyway.
Yeah,
literally, it's just for Bach.
Yeah.
Like, they both just really like Bach.
Yeah, that's basically it. And They eventually get to the little lake town or whatever, and the boys have to go settle or move into their inn because they're not staying with the girls. The boys don't stay with the girls. They don't stay with the girls at the lake house. That's not how it works around here. And so they get set up at the inn and then start walking to the lake house. As they are walking there, they run into Amaclutch. And Amaclutch, and also Amavip, which is the other chaperone. And she's very confused and also surprised. Like, she's like, oh, my ducky. Little Miss Elfie, which that is a little nickname that she uses for Glinda and Elfie. And I just love it so much.
And I love that Alma Clutch is like, oh, ducky. Like, she's just like, oh my God, it's Elfa. Like, I love Elphaba. I know who she is. Like, what are you doing here, girl?
Yeah.
But also, she's like, what are you doing here?
I'm not as aloof as all that, ducky.
So good. So good. That is Alma. And so, yeah, she immediately starts getting Elphaba settled in. And she's like glaring at the boys. She's like, I hope you guys know you're not staying here, because she's not into that. But yeah, she starts getting her settled in, is like, go find the girls, they're over here or whatever. Also, Gromatic, he's behind. Struggling. He is like he's like It Follows. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but he's always following you, but he's always a little bit behind.
He's the presence,
and no one really cares about him because everyone just like kind of hates the TikTok man. Like,
yeah,
they're just really not into him.
I feel like A, Gromatic gives everyone the creeps.
Yeah,
and B, like, I feel like TikTok things have been around since these young people have been children. Like, Clock of the Time Dragon
been around
came around when they were children.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're not used to seeing it every day like that.
But yeah, it feels like that too. It feels like it's not something they're super accustomed to. So they're just like, ooh, like, why is this guy?
Yeah.
Like,
and they're all from rural areas.
Clockwork ways. I don't fuck with that.
People had computers in their houses, but everybody didn't get one at the same time.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. These things are around, but like, who knows where?
Yeah.
Not at home.
I don't know. But Bok, Averick, and Elphaba eventually make it to the girls. And Glinda, who sent the invitation, is horrified that she's seeing Elphaba right now. And is like, what the fuck?
And Finae's sitting there being like...
Yeah. Exactly. Finae's like, oh... But Glinda went off on Elphaba though. She was saying some really horrible things. She says that she feels plagued by her. She was just going off. Even Bok was like, oh, you can't take back some of these things that you say.
He's like, stop it,
which
lay off.
Is so interesting because when when Elphaba was giving a very like forward and like a semi-objective like look of how Glinda was behaving, Bok was like, well, I'm sure she wouldn't want to hear you say that. You should really think better of her and da da da. But then when Glinda, for no reason, is giving these insults to Elphaba, he's like, oh, well, no, stop, wait, but you might regret this. And it's like, dude, it's just two sides, except one, it's different though. It's different. That's all.
He's a dumb boy that only thinks with his fucking dick.
Ah, no. Sorry. Sorry.
It thinks with his cock.
Honestly, weirdly though, I mean, to your point though, Wyatt, like, I feel like in this moment he's showing more loyalty to Elphaba than
he was
to Glinda. Okay,
so Glinda, yeah, she's going off on Elphaba, and then eventually between all this, Finae admits to writing the damn letter, the invitation. She was like, it was me.
She's the only fucking bitch laughing.
Yeah. Also, I will say Elphaba in this, like, during this period, like, she's genuinely confused. And, like, it says, this is the first time Bok has ever seen her confused. And she's basically like, your letter. Like, you know what letter I'm talking about. And by the time she gets it, she's like, oh, well, you invited me here.
She's like, Finae, this is your house? Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, you wrote that, so I'm here.
Exactly.
Now,
she immediately. She's like, well, you sent me an invitation, I guess, and I'm accepting that.
Which, good for her, because I personally would start crying and then leave. Like,
I would definitely
leave.
Oh
my God. This happens and you don't even have a cell phone to text someone about it. Oh my God, I'd get out of there. Yeah. Like,
and
I could not.
She
stay.
Has to ride back with fucking Averick and Gromatic.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The worst. But no, Elfie, yeah, she does decide to stay, and she mainly stays in her room. So honestly, who knows what she's doing in there? She might be crying, but I don't think she is, because
that would hurt.
She doesn't want to get wet.
She's reading in there.
And so she's in her room. Boys are out hanging with the girls. Shenshen and Finae are obsessed with Averick. They're like, who is this fucking hot ass boy that's swimming in our lake? Like,
yeah,
super and into that.
Also, Galinda during this time is visiting Elphaba like every day, like a couple times a day, just to chat with her and like talk to her, which is really sweet because she obviously doesn't have to do that, but she's like, she goes up and talks to her like every day because Elphaba's not leaving her room.
Yeah.
Like, and Galinda's doing that, which I think is really nice. And it's a bit of a change.
It is a bit of a change. And she doesn't, she's like, just stay in your room too, because like, girl, they like, oh, well, actually, this isn't what she's saying to Elphaba. Galinda and Bok actually sit down to talk.
Yes, they do.
A lot happens in this situation. But
I was like,
yeah.
Wait, did we skip?
And he apologizes and is like, kind of takes blame for what happened because he's the one who convinced Elphaba of going to this damn fucking lake house. And Glinda's like, wouldn't you know that that letter, like, I did not write that letter. Like, that does not even sound like me. And he was like, well, I don't know. Like, I thought that you guys were friends with each other. Like, I would have guessed that. And she was like, no, we're roommates. And don't you ever forget that. We're just roommates because Madame Morrible made us roommates. And that's that. So remember that. And he's just like, okay, well, it's a little confusing, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it's like, I mean, I feel like they are kind of friends, but you're like forced to be kind of friendly with someone you share close-knit space like that with.
Yeah.
But even like in this situation, it's like Galinda does not want Elphaba there, but like she doesn't hate her guts. She doesn't want her to be embarrassed and feel sad either.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just weird because like, I guess when I was reading it, I took her being so like, oh God, like what is happening? Like poor Elphaba. As like being like, oh, see, you are friends, just confess. But it's like, no, it's just an uncomfortable situation for everybody. It doesn't mean like that's her bestie. But anyway,
it is an uncomfortable experience for everybody. And it continues to just get uncomfortable. And Bok basically kisses Galinda.
Basically.
Yeah.
No, he does actually multiple times.
Many kisses.
Yeah.
And she kisses.
I feel like, do you feel like it was without her consent?
Well,
she basically
I want to hear everyone's story.
She basically says like, I kind of like you. It just like won't work. Like, this is not what my future is.
Yeah. Because she was being sweet and she was saying like, I don't think that you're like this. You know, I think that you're nice and kind and, you know, like there's good qualities about you and stuff. Yeah. But like, I think it's like, just not for me.
She says something along the lines of like, I don't know what I think about you, but I think about you, like something like that. Mm. And he's just like, this is my inn. This is the only inn I've ever had. Like, gotta take it.
And like when it says like they kiss and then they kiss again or something, I can't remember exactly what it says, but like they didn't kiss. And then Galinda said, no, get off of me. And he kept kissing her. Like there
That's
was
true.
A few no. kisses. And I
They're
think
kissing
yeah.
each other, which frankly, we haven't seen Galinda get attention from any boys other than Bok.
That's because she's never interacted with a boy other than Bok.
Fair.
She's very formal.
At the poetry club, no boys or girls talk to each other.
But she was very much like, I'm going to sit in this chair with the best lighting so all the boys will notice me
and
think that I'm hot, but I won't. She's like a tease.
She wants to be noticed so that in 3 years someone will see her and be like, oh, you were that girl.
I'll marry you.
At the yes.
they kissed one another.
Yes.
I think.
Okay. I'll give in because in my notes it says Bok kissed her without her consent.
Well, erase that note.
I want to see you erase it.
Yeah. Your notes have lies.
We're not doing that. But the next day, Elphaba, Galinda, Bok, Grammatic, and Alma Clutch make the 6-hour trip back to Shiz. But Averick stays behind with the girls.
Yeah, which that is just
which I'm not surprised
crazy.
About.
I was like, I didn't. I'm not even supposed to be.
I know. He really was not even like he was barely invited. But yeah, they get back, and Bach, Crope, and Tibbet immediately get back to researching. Very busy boys. Very busy boys. Mm. And one afternoon, Bach finds an image of the Cumbric Witch in a book that's. Yeah. 500 years old. And the image that he sees, it's depicting the witch wearing blue robes, silver shoes, nursing an unrecognizable beast while floodwaters roil in the background.
So let me think. Who wears blue?
Dorothy.
Who gets silver slippers in the book?
Dorothy.
Who has a type of beast she brings to Oz that they've never seen before?
Dorothy.
AKA
held
the dog
to her
Toto.
Bosom.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing.
There was
seen.
Even a thing too. I didn't write it down, but it was like her heels were clicked together.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah. Like her legs were in a weird way just that like bow-legged. Made them touch. Yeah.
Yeah. So Bach immediately thinks that this picture introduces another explanation for the animal, like
creation.
Getting yeah creation and stuff, and it's you know thinks it's like combining different elements of. Similar existing myths. So he wants to set up a meeting with Elphaba immediately. He's like, mm-hmm. I have to show Elphaba this. And when he shows her, Elphaba honestly is like, this doesn't seem much different than yeah. what we've already seen. So I don't really know, but she's going to bring it to Dr. Dillamund anyway, because she's just like, yeah, he is nonstop. Making breakthroughs, doing his thing. So yeah.
Oh yeah, and she's like, he's composing arias, like, because Elphaba has to write for him because he doesn't like he speaks, she writes it because yeah. he's on hands. But like, she's like, at one point he just started singing, and then I had to take down all the singing, and then I sing it back to him, and then we were just singing together, like, and they're vibing, like, in like a very professional way. Like, she's like, he's on like this like atmospheric. Like high of, oh my God, I'm an intellectual, I'm an academic, and I'm doing this. And she's just fucking writing it. If crazy things weren't about to happen here, Elphaba would be on her way to being like a really good scientist.
Oh yeah.
And also if animal rights existed. So.
Yeah. If it wasn't so fucking difficult yeah. for
and
them.
The well, maybe not the US either, but somewhere this would be good.
Yeah. And so they kind of end their little business research talk, and Bach asks about Glinda, because he has not heard from Glinda since their last little interaction. And Glinda seems to be in a heavy sulk. She's not really interacting with anyone. And Bach is like really wanting to see her again. And Elphaba is just like, can you just not? Because really, Bach, you are worth a dozen of Glinda's, which is insane. Another moment where I'm like, ship, 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 ship.
Yeah. I know. And that's the thing. Like, it does sound like she like has a crush on him, but I genuinely don't know if that's what I think she's saying.
Well, I mean, she does also, like, she says that she notices Bach's reaction. She says,
ew, not me.
Literally, she says, no, I am. That is not what this is.
She does shut it down immediately.
It's in the same way that probably in this exact same cafe, she told Bach a uncensored version of the truth that she feels about Glinda. And then now she's doing the same thing about him. But like, obviously his interpretation of both of those things was wrong.
Yeah, she is very literal, I guess.
Yeah.
An opinion of Glinda can only go so far. Whereas an opinion about Bach, you can talk for days because he's like a real person.
Yeah.
But like Glinda is just like, this is Glinda. She's in this box. Mm-hmm. And so yeah,
she's
I think
in.
What
she's
saying, what she's saying is just like, dude, grow up. But it sounds like she's saying,
yeah,
why don't you ever look at the real girls?
Yeah.
There was a moment too in that conversation where like Bach was like, no, Glinda's my world. And she's like, well, your world must be pretty small if that's all that it is. So,
yeah.
I could agree with that.
I mean, I do get, like, if they ended up in the end of this book, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It's been here the whole time in front of us.
Nobody likes watching their friend waste their time on a subpar.
Yeah.
But the next time that everyone gathers where Bach, Elfie and Galindo are all with each other. It's not a very happy moment.
It's crazy, in fact.
Yeah, all the residents are out, actually. They're all gathered and weeping. They're shocked. And they see a, like, three policemen carrying a stretcher with a body on it. And
a body.
And as they pass, a gust of wind blows the
wind.
I know. I just.
I didn't even think of it.
A gust of wind. Where have we heard that before? Oh my God.
A gust of wind. Well, it moves the sheet that's covering the body and shows Dr. Dillamond with his throat slit.
Yes.
And he's dead.
He fell on the mirror of the microscope. Don't say his throat was slit like that.
Some might say that.
It's broken open. It's bloody. It's red. It's black.
He got an ouchie.
Yeah. And and for a second, Bach is like, oh, he's fine. They're getting him to a hospital. I didn't see that. And then he's like, they're not rushing.
Yeah.
No, they're moving slowly.
There's a sheet over him. That thing was dead.
I just witnessed death. Yeah.
We learn that Alma Clutch was the one to find this scene and sound the alarm.
Well, so, yeah, Galindo is like, okay. So they start chatting with everyone.
Also, pause. Everyone is fucking devastated. Yeah. Like, Galindo, everyone.
And
like,
I'm like,
and of course
so these
they
kids,
are.
So these kids do respect Dr. Dillamond? Because frankly, I haven't been seeing it.
The thing is, and I mean, this is, you know, they're almost adults. They're 17 or older. But, which if you're older, you are an adult. But I think that the thing is, they don't feel personal responsibility or like the impetus to like stop things that are happening that are bad because they don't think they have the power to do it. So like, it's not that they don't like Dr. Dillamond when people are putting him in like a really bad place. They just don't have the tools to do anything about it. But it's not that they don't like him. So I think that's why it does feel like, oh, you're all sad now that he's dead. Where were you before? But it's like, they didn't have any power before. They don't now either, you know? So it's just hard.
Yeah. And they're witnessing someone that they know that's dead. It's just like, it is a crazy thing for anyone to experience. But yeah, so as this is happening, Glinda and Elphaba begin to share the story of the night before. And they're like, yeah, so last night, Alma Clutch noticed something funny. She always closes our drapes, which is a perfect view to Dr. Dillamond's lab. And we'll see the light on, seeing him working, doing his thing. And that night, Alma Clutch kind of saw something weird. And she said that and was like, oh, don't worry, girls. Like, I'm just going to go see what's up. And you just go to bed. It's probably not a big deal. Like, she kind of shuts it down or whatever.
Very casual.
But then in the next morning, Glinda's explaining that Alma Clutch didn't come up for tea. And she never misses tea.
She does not miss tea.
That's crazy. She does not
miss tea time. Never has she. And so they're like, okay, well, that's super weird. They go into... or they ask Madame Morrible what's going on, and Madame Morrible basically explains to them that Alma Clutch has relapsed. That little condition that Galindo made up, apparently Alma Clutch is experiencing that right now. But yeah. Madame Morrible is not letting them see her, so they're just like, okay, what the fuck? And then they go to their lecture with Dr. Dillamond, and Dr. Dillamond's not there, and they're like, okay, what the fuck is going on?
I think it's important to note that, like, Galindo cannot say that condition doesn't exist.
Yeah. She can't.
Like, because that's the whole premise of her situation
here.
You
can't do it. Madame Morrible is a smart cookie.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as far as Galindo knows, she's just another victim of the power of words. Because it's like, a devil's coming to rush margins. Bam, we got a devil.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, oh, Alma Clutch has this condition. Well, now Alma Clutch has this condition, you know?
It's very strange, yeah. And so they eventually go and just see Alma Clutch anyway. And Amaclutch is messed up. And not only is she relapsing, but she has that rusty fucking nail.
Somehow, which is crazy.
And is talking to it like it's a person. And that's what Galinda and Elphaba were doing right before they saw Dr. Dillamund, now dead. And that is the end. That is the end of Bok. And Wyatt, what would you like to call that?
Bok. Murder.
Is that Belina?
Thank you for listening to Oz Hour. Please join us next time as we continue with Wicked, the life and times of the Wicked Witch of the West. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Oz Hour Podcast for the latest on everything Oz. Oz Hour, created and hosted by Blake Stone and Wyatt Swingham. Co-hosted by Hannah Aguirre. Audio production by Charlie Johnson. Theme music written and performed by Rudy Clovis. Cover art by Valentine.